The book of Deuteronomy, chapter 8, beginning at verse 2. And you can find this on page 187 of the Pew Bibles. Remember how the Lord your God led you all the way in the desert these 40 years to humble you and to test you in order to know what was in your heart, whether or not you would keep his commands. He humbled you, causing you to hunger, and then feeding you with manna, which neither you nor your fathers had known, to teach you that man does not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of the Lord. Your clothes did not wear out, and your feet did not swell during these 40 years. Know then in your heart that as a man disciplines his son, so the Lord your God disciplines you. Observe the commands of the Lord your God, walking in his ways and revering him. For the Lord your God is bringing you into a good land, a land with streams and pools of water, with springs flowing in the valleys and hills, a land with wheat and barley, vines and fig trees, pomegranates, olive oil and honey, a land where bread will not be scarce and you will lack nothing, a land where the rocks are iron and you can dig copper out of the hills. When you have eaten and are satisfied, praise the Lord your God for the good land he has given you. Be careful that you do not forget the Lord your God, failing to observe his commands, his laws, and his decrees that I am giving you this day. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
So here is your sermon part one. Stuck on the cupboard in my kitchen is a car park ticket. It's for the 24th of April, 2021. It's for a car park in Pangbourne, and it will tell you that it was in the evening. I had gone there on a gloomy evening to have my booster or my second jab for COVID. I went into the car park, which had cameras recording that your car had been there, and I discovered that I had no cash on me and no card. Wondering what to do, I walked over to a group of people to try to find somebody who could help me, somebody official in that building. But there was nobody, until a man just fumbled in his pocket, held his hand out full of coins and said, "How much is it going to be, love?" So I said, 70p. So he said, "Here, take this." And so I was spared my parking fine by the generosity of a stranger. I'll pick that up later on. There are times when we just stop and think about the generosity with which we're surrounded. God's generosity in making a beautiful world. I've just come back from Scotland, and the beauty there was astounding, even when it was raining. We're grateful for our good fortune. We're grateful for the ways that God has blessed us. But there are other times too when we don't remember these things, when we just take them all for granted. Perhaps when our minds are clouded or our minds are preoccupied, or we're full of anger, or full of worry, or full of pain, but we just don't even see the goodness around us. So today we're going to think about generosity. We're going to think about the children of Israel, we're going to think about the church in Philippi, and we're going to think about ourselves. So Deuteronomy. The context was that Israel had been in slavery in Egypt for a couple or even 400 years. And now they were free. God had delivered them out of Egypt, and they'd ended up wandering in the wilderness for 40 years. He promised to them that he would be taking them into a land which was specially for them, a land where they could settle and be free. But traveling for 40 years in the wilderness is not fun. And as they stood on the edge of the promised land, God reminded them of who he is. He reminded them that he is the Lord. He is the one true God. He is Jehovah. He is their provider. He is their God, and they are his people, chosen and privileged and blessed. And he reminds them of his generosity. He's bringing them to a land of abundance and beauty. In this passage that Ian read, we have these wonderful things about this land. It's a good land, a land with brooks and valleys and hills and streams of fresh water, a land where wheat and barley and vines and fig grow, a land where there's olive oil and honey, a land where there's everything that they could need, and it will be beautiful. What more could they want? But God knows them. God knows what they've been like in the wilderness. And God knows that these people, in fact, any of his people, coming into a beautiful place like that, will soon find that things start going wrong and there are dangers lurking. He paints for them contrasts. He paints for them the contrast between the desert, which had been endless sand and no fresh food and no water and wild animals and heat and storms. And here was this land of comfort and abundance, no extreme temperatures, food in plenty. And he reminds them too that while they were in the wilderness, they were starving. And they were even ready to stone Moses, their leader. And they had at times no food and no water. And they moaned and complained and grumbled and shouted at him and disbelieved him. And if you read Exodus, you'll find all these stories coming out of a disgruntled people who were really struggling. And yet God reminds them that despite their complaints, he was faithful to them. And all these things that went wrong were actually him challenging them, him testing them, him proving their faith, him helping them to see that he was their provider and that he was always there and he would always care for them. And there's this lovely verse that Ian read, verse 4, where he says to them, "Your clothes did not wear out, and your feet did not swell." Imagine it. Imagine it. What a lovely verse to remember. Your feet didn't swell because I was looking after you. And so God's saying to them, these years of your trials were not wasted because you learnt of him and you learnt to prove him and you learnt that he was totally trustworthy. In 1943, Dietrich Bonhoeffer was in a prison cell, and life was pretty grim. He'd been part, a fine Christian scholar, he'd been part of a plot to kill Hitler. And he was in prison, and he said this, "Much as I long to be out of here, I don't believe a single day has been wasted. We will come out of it all much strengthened." And that's what testing is all about. And in a sense, Bonhoeffer was grateful that the awful things he was enduring at that moment would, when he came out of it, he would be grateful and he would see God's goodness. But God warns his people that all this abundance and all this prosperity didn't mean that life was from then on going to be hunky-dory, because they were people. And there would be temptations, and there would be pride and power struggles and falling out and abuse of the world that God had made and abuse of other people. We just need to look at the news to see what humanity does to humanity. And so God challenged them, and he said, "These are the things you need to do as you go into my land, as you inhabit this beautiful place." And the things he said to them were, first of all, worship your holy, good God. Remember and obey his laws. So number one, worship him. Number two, remember his laws and obey them. Number three, be grateful for his care and his generosity and his forgiveness. And number four, praise and thank him for his utter goodness. We know from history, and we know from our own lives, because we're just like them, that they and we were arrogant and self-sufficient and proud and disobedient, and at times very far from him, at times ignoring him. They didn't heed his words. But we know that God's generosity to his people then and right the way through time to us has never failed and will never fail. And God spoke many times to his people. He challenged them many times to follow him and be true to him. But every time they failed. And so it was God in his generosity that gave his son Jesus, who was humbled and became a man and was obedient to death, even death on the cross. And that was God's way of helping his people and helping us to know him and to love him and to follow him more.
Therefore, my brothers and sisters, you whom I love and long for, my joy and crown, stand firm in the Lord in this way, dear friends. I plead with you, Euodia, and plead with you, Syntyche, to be of the same mind in the Lord. Yes, and I ask you, my true companion, help these women, since they have contended at my side in the cause of the gospel, along with Clement and the rest of my co-workers, whose names are in the book of life. Rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Whatever you have learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put it into practice, and the God of peace will be with you.
Thank you, Sharon. So now we move on to the church in Philippi, a church that was prosperous, a church that seemed to be thriving. But how were they living? Were they living thinking and being thankful for the generosity of God? And were they reflecting their gratitude in their lives and the way that they were generous to each other? The church in Philippi was founded on Paul's second missionary journey. He got to this town, which was quite a significant town. There was no synagogue there, and a synagogue needed 10 or more Jewish men. So there were very few Jews around. So he went down to the riverbank, where he met a woman called Lydia, who was a businesswoman and was in trade selling purple cloth. And he talked to her, and she and her household became Christians. And as a result, this spread out. And soon in Philippi, there was a church that was growing. And it was a church that was nurtured by Paul. He stayed there for quite a long time. And there was mutual generosity. They welcomed him, they cared for him, they supported him. And he taught them the good news of Jesus. He helped encourage them in their faith, and he loved and he cared for them. And when he went off to other places, they sent financial gifts so that he was never in need. So Paul writes to this church with tremendous affection. It's the letter in the New Testament that just shouts out love and joy. And joy is joy is mentioned. Sorry, I'm just going to sweet out. Joy is mentioned in this gospel 16 times in 4 chapters. So there's a lot of joy going on. And what Paul wants to do is to encourage them, to tell them to remember and be grateful for the love of God, to remember the sacrifice of his sin for theirs and our sake, and to live in like-minded ways, to live like Christ, in humility and in generosity and in all that they did. There was much goodness in that community, but too, they got it wrong. And there were times in this letter when Paul just challenges them a little bit. And then we get to chapter 4, the bit that Sharon read. And the first thing that she read was about two women, where Paul says, Euodia, I plead with Euodia, and I plead with Syntyche to be of the same mind in the Lord. Yes, and I ask you, my true companion, help these women, since they've contended at my side in the cause of the gospel, and their names are in the book of life. So here were these two women having some sort of disagreement, some sort of argument. So Philippians was a church that was trying to follow God, trying to follow his rules, but actually things were going wrong. And we don't know what was going wrong, and that's probably quite good. It could have been a doctrinal issue. It could have been an ethical thing. It could have been personal. It could have been about feeding the hungry. But whatever it was, these two women had worked together and helped grow the church, and now things were going horribly wrong, so much so that Paul, a long way away, had heard about it and was distressed. And he wrote to them in generosity, and he said, I'm grateful for your tender affection, but now you've got to get it sorted out. So here we are. You have got to learn to be generous to each other. And there are all sorts of challenges in life about generosity. Our human nature is still much the same as the children of Israel. And the Philippian church and we have to be aware that we are still worshipping a holy God, a God who wants the best for his people and in his people, and for his people to do the best to each other. He wants his people to obey his laws. He wants them to reflect his generosity. And so he challenges them. And he says to them, the core that you need is Jesus. And you need to be like Jesus. And so we go back to chapter 2 of Philippians, where we see Jesus, who being in the form of God, humbled himself and became a man, and then died on the cross for our sakes. These are the things that we need to do. We need to learn about him. We need to read and meditate and pray, and then reflect who he is in our lives. And if we hold on to him, Paul tells the Philippians, we will have peace. In World War II, there were many orphaned children who were left to starve and who were eventually put into refugee camps. But it was noticed by those who were caring for them that they couldn't sleep. They were frightened that they would wake up the following morning homeless and without food. They were frightened that the goodness they were experiencing there would not be there for them once they'd been to sleep. And finally, the people looking after them discovered that if they gave them a piece of bread to hold when they went to sleep, they knew that today I ate and I will eat again tomorrow. And these children somehow gained peace from knowing that the bread was there for them. That was their peace. And this is our peace too, because if we can hold on to Jesus, the bread of life, if we can hold on to him and imitate him and rejoice in him and trust him, he will transform lives and he will bring peace. Paul says it in the letter. Brothers and sisters, whatever's true, whatever is noble, whatever's right, whatever's pure, whatever's lovely, whatever's admirable, think on these things and the God of peace will be with you. If we can focus on God's goodness, our thoughts will be holding on to the peace that he gives. So where does this leave us? Paul was telling all this to the Philippians, and it's true for us today. And if we stop looking at God, if we stop remembering his goodness to us and obeying him, things will go really wrong. Maybe we need to stop today and think about God's goodness to us. In fact, stop now and think of three ways in which God's been good to you and you are thankful to him. You don't have to tell us all. Three ways in which God has been good to us. And it's not just over 40 years. For some of us, it's over 20. For some of us, it's over 40. For some of us, it's a lot more. But we can each stop and remember the ways in which God has been good to us, the way in which God's provided, the way in which God's taught us about himself, the way in which he's blessed us and been generous to us, but also the ways in which life has been hard and he's challenged us and taught us things, the way in which he's disciplined us as our heavenly Father. And it's very good to stop. I went on a retreat at one stage, and they taught us about a thing called the examen. And it's a thing that you do at the end of the day, and it is very, very straightforward. You just stop and you say to yourself, for what moment today am I most grateful? And you thank God for that. And then you might start thanking God for all sorts of other moments today in which you've been grateful. And then you think, for what moment today am I least grateful? What's gone wrong? What's hurt me? What have I done wrong? And you reflect on those things before God and you bring them to him and you just lay them before him. And this simple process, examining yourself before God, the good things and the challenging things, actually is a wonderful way of ending the day. It's sort of holding God with you as you finish. So how do we actually reflect our gratitude to God? How do we reflect it to those around us? How do we use our ability to care for people, our wealth and our money, our time, our gifts? Who do we give our smiles to, or don't we smile? What do we do when we disagree with people? What are our attitudes to people we find a bit difficult to get on with? What are we like? Jesus said to his friends, when I was in prison, did you visit me? When I was hungry, did you feed me? When I was naked, did you clothe me? When I was a stranger, did you greet me? When I was sick, did you help heal me? These are all things that spin out of our gratitude for God's goodness to us. So thank you. Thank you for the times when you have been a good neighbor. Thank you for the gifts that you gave at Harvest for the food bank and for Burkina Faso. Thank you to the town team who care for the hospital garden and who talk to people who are in need. Thank you to street pastors. Thank you to people who make coffee for us. Thank you to people who are our good neighbours. Thank you to our clergy who keep this church going and teach us and care for us. Thank you for all these things that reflect the generosity of God, God's people showing his love to other people. Thank you to the musicians and the choir. Thank you to the stewards. Thank you for Daniel, who turned on the heating this morning. You know, we could go on for ages just thanking people and being grateful to God for those around us. And hopefully, we're part of those people who reflect the generosity of God. And finally, the man who gave me the parking ticket. It reminded me of a film that our youth leader in my church in Radley used to talk about quite frequently, and she showed it to the young people, and it was called Pay It Forward. You might have seen it. Basically, it's a story of a boy who at school was given a project that would, given the task of designing a project that would change the world. And he hit on the idea that if you did a good thing to three different people, you could then encourage them to pay it back by each of them going to three different people. Pay it forward, not pay it back, pay it forward. And so what did I do with my parking ticket? It really challenged me. That's why it's on the door of the cupboard in the kitchen. And I'm glad to tell you, and this is nothing to do with my goodness, I'm glad to tell you that one day at a parking meter, I met two people who didn't have any change and the meter would only accept money, not cards. So I was able to give each of these a pound coin and pay forward somebody else's goodness to me. Gratitude. God has been so generous to us. Let us go on trying to be generous to those around us, reflecting and thanking God for all he's been to us.